Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. For those of you joining us for the first time, Bad Storytellers is a podcast about a small group of amateur writers who submit and critique each other's work as well as discuss the written media we consume. It's like a book club but with a wider focus. Our group submissions are shared on our website, badstorytellers.com, and you can download them there if you'd like to read along with us. Additionally, we also accept your submissions for critique. If you would like some feedback with the same candor that we give each other, send in your submission to badstorytellers@gmail.com. Entries must be 10 pages or less. Additionally, at the end of each show, we roll the dice, pick three genres, and come up with a movie idea. Once we decide upon a name, we record the trailer for your listening pleasure. Enjoy! Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the season-ending episode of Bad Storytellers. I'm your host today, Josh LaForge, and with me today is Max Wessel.
Hey!
Liam Malone.
Call me, girl.
And Tug Banks.
Hello!
All right, so the reason this is a season-ender is that I got a new job. It's very demanding, and I don't know what kind of schedule it will take to make this happen, so we are going on hiatus until some kind of regularity is established. So think of this as me ingesting a lot of fiber.
God damn it.
I was going to make a Metamucil joke, but you did it for me, so thanks.
You're welcome. A lot has happened between our last recording and this one. A lot of media has come out that I'm sure people want us to talk about. But so specifically Stranger Things, right?
That's
pretty much
what I want to jam on all day.
Okay, what we'll do is the same thing we did for Star Wars. We will save the Stranger Things. Like, we'll give our initial impressions without spoilers, and then we'll save the Stranger Things discussion for at the end of the podcast.
Done.
I like it.
Everybody cool with that?
Yes.
All right. We have some retractions from the last episode.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the Steve Martin movie where he's a mobster in witness protection is My Blue Heaven, not My Blue Valentine.
Ah. Yeah.
Jeff Buckley was not in the 27 Club. He died at 30. I was wrong. And the album discussed at the end that I was discussing wasn't The Beatles Never Died. It was The Beatles Never Broke Up by Everyday Chemistry.
All right. Those are some solid retractions. I like that. It's a good set.
It's a good set.
Some good mistakes. It's a good set.
We have interesting conversations.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing?
Oh, I think actually Will had a retraction. He was like, when you're like, you know how technology is advanced and we still use toilet paper?
Yes.
Will immediately called me and was like, bidets, motherfucker.
Yeah, but
you still use toilet paper with the bidets.
I know. That's what that was the conversation I had with him for too long this morning.
Okay.
Are bidets considered new technology still?
To most Americans, yeah.
Butt fountain.
The butt fountain.
Yeah. What have you guys consumed in the past 3-4 weeks?
I went on vacation, which is why we are late with this one, and I read Murakami's Wind Up Bird Chronicle, which is like...
What's that about?
It's a metaphysical mystery novel, and it starts out really slow.
Meaning like the mystery novel may not exist?
It's a mystery novel involving metaphysics.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's this guy, a bunch of bad stuff's happening to him, his wife disappears, he needs to find his wife, but to do that he needs to sit at the bottom of a well, a dry well, and lose himself in another dimension.
Okay.
Makes sense.
The whole thing is crazy, but it's really good and it's really fun to read. And the plot is so-so. It's more about tone, characterization, just kind of like when you get done putting down the book, you're like, oh, that was fun. It was fun. That was a fun little ride.
Cool. Isn't Murakami famous for writing? Sorry, instructing writing?
Oh, I have no idea. I just read his books. So I read The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
Noir novel.
You're doing research.
Yeah, pretty much. I also started The Maltese Falcon. That is a better movie than it is a book, man.
It's a bit of a slog.
Oh, it's just the fact that it's third person takes away from it, takes away from a lot of the vibe. And Stranger Things, of course.
Yeah, Stranger Things. Doug, did you finish Stranger Things as well?
Yeah, I did.
Cool.
Oh, thank God.
Max, what about you?
I definitely watched Stranger Things. I enjoyed it. I finished Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which
I didn't finish that yet.
It's great still. I can continue reading the Dresden Files, mm-hmm. which are always good.
Counterfactual history.
Yeah. It's always a fun series. He doesn't know what's happening, then he knows what's happening, then it's done. So it's like a very self-contained one and done that is a continuation of a series.
It's kind of like a Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, very much, where it's not like you're going to be like, oh, I got to get the next one. It's okay. Sometimes there will be a cliffhanger, but it's good. I watched a Australian zombie movie called Wormwood on Netflix. That was really good. There's one called They're Watching Us, which is a horror movie on Netflix about some village in Eastern Europe with witches, and that was good. I saw Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, we hadn't talked about that.
I liked it better than the originals. And
as soon as he said that, my skin crawls. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. It's because you're a misogynist.
I don't think so.
God. Oh, and I was reading The Martian. I like it.
Yeah, I've heard varying reports about the book versus the movie. I heard the book from one Nerdy Show reviewer that it was incredibly boring.
They left something out of the movie that would have made the movie is great, but it would have made more sense. In the movie, they talk about him being a botanist, and he's like, I'm a botanist. He's like, I'm going to do this because I'm a botanist. I can do this because I'm a botanist. But in the book, on the first like page, he's like, hey, I'm a botanist and a mechanical engineer.
Yeah.
If they had been in the movie like, oh, he's a mechanical engineer, would have made a shit ton more sense. He's a goddamn mechanical engineer, then he's a botanist. Was there anything else I consumed in this broad period? No.
Nachos? There's... I need you.
Oh, I made fried chicken tonight. It was really good.
Okay, you consumed some fried chicken.
Well, I ate a chicken, and then I fried it.
Doug, what about you?
Stranger Things, obviously, and we'll talk about that later. Other than that, I really haven't had time to consume much of anything, because I wasted way too much time playing Civilization V after it was on sale, and I deleted it off my computer, so that shan't be happening again soon.
Okay, how is it? It's super good?
Yeah, you know me, I've never been a huge fan of any type of strategy game or resource management game,
which
or anything.
Surprises me, knowing your personality. That's,
yeah,
I mean, always I'm like,
I look at you and I see micromanagement.
What? How? Yeah. Like, this thing I detest.
Actually,
I can't see your face, man. I don't know. I can't tell if you're joking. But
thinking
of
Leonard Nimoy makes me think of the Civ games and not anything.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, like Max, you're talking about Hearts of.
Oh, Hearts of Iron, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh my god, like I love the idea of playing as a country in World War II, but it looks so boring. But now I've done Civilization V, I'm like, okay, I get the appeal, but I gotta fucking stop playing it, because it's like, it was built to have an addictive quality to it.
And the Civ games took everything that Hearts of Iron has and just boiled it out and kept the fun parts to keep the game going and be fun. There's never a moment in Civ V where I'm bored, because there's always something to do. Well, Hearts of Iron is a lot of, like, walk away and come back a half hour and see if it's done.
Yeah. Well, since I've deleted it, my productivity has gone up about 400%, so I'm better off without it, even though I would recommend it to anyone who likes those kind of games.
As for me, I saw Ghostbusters. I saw it with Doug. Not a fan. Felt very misled, because it's clearly a film for children. And the trailers made it seem like, I don't know, not that, made it seem like an adult, you know, cheesy comedy. And also because I had seen recently another movie in theaters that was a comedy called Central Intelligence that was so much better. I was just disappointed that this was billing itself as a comedy and for adults, and it clearly is not. I mean, not even a little bit. Also, the trailers kind of paint Leslie Jones as like a terrible tokenist reactionary character. She's not. The movie, she's the best character.
She was the best part of that movie.
She was the best part of the movie. Yeah, I wasn't a fan, but I wasn't offended by it or anything. It's just definitely not a film for me, and that's okay. But the original...
Is your childhood intact?
Is my childhood? No, I ruined my childhood a long time ago.
Yeah.
At the bottom of a bottle.
I watched the original after watching
the new
one.
Ruined my childhood with drugs and alcohol. Just like every red-blooded American.
I also saw two documentaries that were very heavy. They're both by the same filmmaker named Joshua Oppenheimer. And it was The Act of Killing and The Look of Silence. One follows the other. It's about the genocides in Indonesia. And
is that the one where they recreate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, it's genius. I mean, it's mm-hmm. genius because the filmmaker wants them to talk about the atrocities they committed, and some people are very proud of these atrocities, but he doesn't want them to feel like they're being attacked because they'll fucking kill you.
Yeah.
So what he does is he pretends instead that all he wants to do is have them make their own movie about it where they recreate the scenes, and he wants them to confront how horrible it is, but he doesn't tell them that. And then he's like, oh, I'm just here to film you guys making it because I think it's important. So you guys make it how you would make it, and then I'll film it. And you see them because they play the victims as well, and they relive it from their perspective. And towards the end of the movie, you start to see them realizing how horrible and evil, I mean, like, just yeah. the most evil things in the world that they've done. Like, to where one guy's like, he's watching a scene and he sees himself as the victim, and he had to stop the scene because it was too intense for him. And then he's like, he's talking to the filmmaker Joshua, and he's like the thing that happened in this scene, like, I felt how my victim felt. Like, he's like, I couldn't do it. I felt like that's how they felt. Is that how they felt? And he goes, no, they felt much worse because they knew you were going to kill them and that they were going to die. And they were going through real pain at the time as well. And he like, it just, you see, like, it actually comes together for this person who's kind of stupid. Like, it's, you get the impression that the people who committed these murders are fundamentally not introspective at yeah. all. And then this kind of forces them to examine what they did, and it's powerful.
I feel like, if you were introspective, would you go through with it?
That's the thing, yeah. yeah. But it's interesting way to force them to be introspective without attacking them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it was really good.
How do you come into a documentary and be like, you're wrong, and they're going to be like, no, we're not.
It's yeah. also important not to die making your documentary.
Yeah. So before the first one was released, because he knew that, like, he would be killed or he just wouldn't be able to return to Indonesia, he made a second documentary called The Look of Silence, which is also in Indonesia. And they found this guy. I think his name's Adi. I could have that wrong. I feel so bad if I get his name wrong. But this guy is an optometrist, and his older brother was killed right before he was born in these. And they know the people, like the exact people who killed him, and those people remember killing him. And a couple of years before, Joshua had interviewed those people. So this documentary is him sitting down and watching the video of these killers bragging about killing his older brother. And then he goes and gives them an eye exam, where the eye exam is kind of a disarming experience, so he can ask them very deep questions and they'll start answering in a way that they normally would be a little more defensive. And it surprises them, and it's very they're both very upsetting documentaries.
That's amazing, but it also makes me a little sad.
Yeah.
Because what kind of revenge could a guy giving you an eye exam do to you?
Well, he's not out for revenge.
I mean, but if he was, that would be a dope movie too.
But like, there's a part where his mother is being like, I didn't know that, I wouldn't have agreed to do this documentary if I knew you were actually going to sit down with the killers, because they'll kill you. And he's like, yeah, but she's like, well, what do you want? He's like, I want to forgive them. Like, he's like, I think I could forgive them if I could find even one person who would acknowledge what they did was wrong. Even just one person, I think I could find the strength to forgive them. And it's like, and he just goes through, and he's like, he's a remarkable person. I can't recommend this one enough. I think it's better than The Act of Killing, just because it's so personal and, I don't know, very good. I read two books. I read Way Station by Clifford Simak and The Chrysalids by John Wyndham. Way Station is about a guy who lives in a house that isn't a house. It's a way station for aliens to travel long distances. They have to stop somewhere before they make the next jump. And he just the intro to the book, it talks about Clifford Simak taking a different view of humanity than Heinlein, in that Heinlein thinks humans are super badass. In all these different situations, humans adapt and they kick ass. Whereas Simak's picture of humanity is that we might be the friendliest out there.
Ooh.
So it's interesting because...
That's terrifying.
No, it's good. It's good because this guy, I can't remember the main character's name. Enoch? I think his name's Enoch. He's from the 1800s, because whenever he's inside the house, he doesn't age. So he only ages about an hour each day when he goes on his morning walk. Yeah, but he's like just a genuinely friendly person, lives in a small town, so people kind of know that he doesn't age, but they just keep, they mind their own business. That's, but
yeah, it's like none of the children are missing. There's no witchcraft. Yeah.
So what happens? So the plot of the book is the reason why humans are the friendliest is he just makes friends with everybody who comes through. He gives them food. They talk. They laugh. They do all this kind of stuff, and everybody's just so surprised by how much they like him because aliens are typically a little standoffish, but they're very disarmed in front of him. And then an alien dies in his house, and he's asked to perform a ritual to bury him. And he's like, okay. So he like takes him out back, and they were friends. And he like digs a grave, and he'd learned a little bit of their language. He writes a little inscription, and then somebody takes the body, and it becomes a intergalactic incident.
Oh,
but people start showing up, like diplomats from the thing, and there's the whole reason somebody would take the body is because of they're trying to pull resources away from expanding into this arm of the galaxy, and they'll have to shut down his way station, and they'll have to do all this. And he's like, what? But no, come on. And he's like, I'll solve this problem. I'll do it. And then he and a couple aliens who are also his friends like go to try to solve the problem because they genuinely believe that he has the best intentions. It's good. I recommend it. It was a very uplifting book. And The Chrysalids is about some kids who are psychic trying to escape from a post-apoc religious cult who kills anybody with any kind of deformity. And being psychic isn't a physical deformity, but it would be seen as not being made in the eyes of God. And it's about them trying to escape. And the youngest one is the most powerful, and she's in contact with people from Australia. And she's like relaying to them where to go, and the people from Australia are going to come get them. And I don't know, it's good.
That sounds good.
It would make a good movie. It's not a very deep book, but it's good. And of course, Stranger Things. You guys want to talk a little bit about Stranger Things without spoiling anything?
Yes.
No, because I immediately want to just gush for about 45 minutes.
I enjoy the D&D opening.
Yeah, the D&D themes throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Characterization was really fun. They got to spread that over the 8 episodes very well. Most of the casting choices were, just great.
Yeah, I loved Lucas. Like, he's just, as the skeptic, just...
Dusty's my guy, man.
Yeah. I did see a great post on, 2 days after that show released, it was a picture of Dustin smiling, and then it just said, if anything happens to this kid, I am deleting Netflix.
I would say, just be careful when recommending it, because you don't want to hype it up too much. I've spoken with people who hadn't seen it yet, and when they finally saw it, they were like, it's good, but everybody overhyped it, and I don't know, it's not really doing it for me. I don't know if I'm going to finish it.
I think that it's just not made for that kind of person.
Yeah.
I don't think you could have overhyped it for me.
I have a friend who hates it.
Yeah,
I don't think I overhyped it, but I think other people are overhyping it. Like, I've heard other people talking about it, and they're just like, I mean, it is a great show, and I really enjoyed it a heck of a lot, but
it's not as good as Breaking Bad as a television show, but as if you think of it as like an 8-hour movie, it's fucking phenomenal. Recommended it to both my dad and my mom, and both of them finished it in 2 days when they watched it. And I was like, so what do you think? They're like, it's just so good. It's just so good.
It's
and
fun.
It's fun and like
and a little scary, but not too scary.
Exactly. Yeah. My mom can't handle the scary stuff, so she's like, it got pretty scary at one, but then it comes around. Like, but, you know,
it like reminds you of being a kid and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just
solid. It's so solid.
When the world was just more open and that kind of thing.
And the bad
guys
were
saying bad. Your favorite characters were the kids. My favorite character was their science teacher.
Interesting. See, I think the sheriff might have been mine.
He was my actual favorite character. Yeah.
The sheriff goes from being somebody who I'm like, ugh, this archetype again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To, I think Nancy might have been the best character for me.
Which one's Nancy? The girl?
Older sister?
Oh, the older sister?
She was
an idiot.
Yeah.
She was a dum-dum.
She's a dum-dum.
She's a dum-dum? How is she a dum-dum?
They did have the one thing that
Barb, I want you to come with me and stop me if, you know, from doing something bad. Don't worry, Barb. I'm totally going to bone this guy and you can leave.
Yeah.
And then the whole time... Well, that's spoiling. I don't want to go into it.
Yeah. But
so cut me off before I... So
as D&D... Like, someone who plays D&D doesn't only speak in D&D terms like they had some of the kids do.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's still a good touchstone.
No,
there's a lot of stuff in that show that where people act like they wouldn't act, but they act perfectly for this kind of genre.
They act perfectly if they existed in an 80s movie universe.
Exactly. It feels like they combined the best parts of Poltergeist and E.T., and it's better than both.
And Say Anything and 16 Candles.
If 16 Candles, they used a baseball bat filled with nails.
Well, if that's how it ended, we're like, oh, we got together, and I'm not sure about the other guy, and they killed a monster. That's that plot line.
Or tried to.
Yeah, Breakfast it's 16 Club. Candles while Jaws is happening.
Yeah.
I think we got to get into spoiler territory.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to stop this conversation here, and it's gonna pick back up after the after we're done with the criticism and the body of the episode. That's our.
All right. Are we going to talk about submissions first?
I think we should do our stuff first and then move on to submissions. How do you guys feel about that?
I feel good about that.
Because that way we can spend a little more, we can be a little more frank with each other, and then we don't know the people who submitted, so we can change the tone a bit. We're going to talk about our submissions, and then we have two fan submissions that we're going to go over, the most we've ever had, and give some criticism and critique. So
we objectively have two fans.
Yeah. And hopefully some encouragement. Liam, what'd you bring in?
I brought in a revised version of the first chapter of The Goblin Story.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is the one I'm the most happy with by far. This is as close, like, tonally, this is like 90% there.
What
at
you
least.
Want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I got the bones. I know.
Why don't you summarize what happens?
You find out there's a detective. He goes into his office. His partner's there. They banter a little bit. A lady enters. She's looking for her teacher, who's a wizard, because it turns out it's a fantasy world. Oh, I was slipping it in kind of slowly through the way. They exchange a bunch of information, and Bowman, who's his partner, goes off to speak to the police to find out if there's any information on this missing person, and Trowel has to go after the Guilfords, which is a local gang.
Okay.
I think you found it. I think you found your opening.
Yeah.
Because the last ones was really... We're going through the jungle with them. There's a lot of stuff happening before we knew who anyone was, and this is the classic introduction.
Well, I also want to make sure that you knew that characters liked each other, because I don't feel like you ever got that. Like, they're not... they like each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My biggest criticism for you, by far, is the dialogue. I think that all three characters kind of sound the same.
Okay.
They use the same stilted way of talking around each other, so like, you'll have to excuse my associate, and you know, can you please describe this associate of yours? Oh yeah, he is around 6 feet, but no taller, and he does this and that, and they'll be like, oh, you'll have to excuse my rude friend here, and like, oh, I'm not being rude, young miss, don't do it. They all take the exact same tone when they're conversing together, and then when they split, it changes a little bit. There should be some consistency, and if somebody changes the tone when somebody walks in,
it needs to be a reason.
It also should be different. A different tone than anybody else is still using. So that's my biggest criticism. I think if you nail down each character's voice, then this scene will actually play out a lot better too. Exactly as it is.
Yeah.
What about you, Doug?
I would agree. I would just say that every complaint I've had before with the different versions of this, you've been fixing. So I feel like you're really on the right track, and this has been improving with each one that you've done. One of the last things I remember saying was I felt that your detective was too forthcoming with his knowledge, like he was kind of thinking out loud, and I didn't feel that this time, with the exception of one moment when he said something along the lines of like, oh, you know, you went to that part of town, you know, like someone like yourself. I feel like he would have saved that for his partner, because I loved the idea that he's just kind of like, okay, going along with it, and then you kind of twist it where at the end he's like, okay, she's lying about this, and, you know, how did she get that kind of money? Or, you know, how could she afford that kind of thing if she's just, you know, in her fifth year at school? What was she doing at that end of town, someone like her? So she's clearly lying about where she's getting her money and whatever. Like, I loved, like, that you think he's piecing together something already, but instead you get this entirely different opinion once he's with Bowman. Mm. So
I like that.
I mean, I still got that, but, as long as he's more guarded...
Tighten it up. I got
it. But good, man. I think you've really got it. So.
Yeah, it's definitely improving.
Loose lips sink ships.
it feels tonally appropriate for like everything you're going for.
So is that everything?
Yes. I'd say so.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
It is the third time we've read almost the same story. It's not that big of a deal.
If that's all, what I brought in is the sixth chapter. It might be the first half of the sixth chapter of Malcolm Hat. It starts off with Malcolm in a tree, and he's been put there, and I don't really reveal what he's there to do until an animal appears, and then he grabs a bow, and he's like going to take a shot, and he's like, I can't shoot. I'm not going to shoot them. We have plenty of meat, and like gives up and takes a shot in case anybody's watching, but intentionally misses. And then he gets home, and he doesn't get dinner, and then he has to work all day and work all day, and then goes out again, doesn't see an animal, goes home, still doesn't get dinner. And eventually he caves and takes the shot for real and feels so terrible that not only that he missed, but the weight of the responsibility of actually trying to hurt an animal, that if he had, and he still felt like he needed to, that Kilvin immediately sees that on his face and believes him and gives him food. So that's the chapter.
Yeah. It's got another lesson. It goes along with the teaching you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the lesson comes through pretty clear.
Oh, good.
For the reader.
My biggest.
It's a character progression for Malcolm, and it's also another reveal of Kilvin as being very capable and very aware of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Malcolm understanding for the first time necessity, something he's never really run into before.
Do you feel like my worry in this one, because there's so many, I'm kind of really compressing his like philosophical problems into a very short mm-hmm. amount of stage. Do you feel like his, like when you're in his head, does he still feel like the same person that he did in the other chapters?
I feel like a person who's growing.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is the same person two steps down the line.
Okay. And you sympathize with what he's...
Yes.
Okay. That's my main worry. What do you think about the structure of it? Was it confusing how it is kind of elastic depending on what night it is?
No, because I also read the other version you had before you were doing that.
Right.
I think. And it's... I'm not going to say it's ideal, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
I feel like as an adult, I got the lesson right away. And that kind of carried me through him getting the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting for me to read him get the lesson because I already knew what I thought he was going for.
What Kilvin was trying to show him.
Yeah. And it might not have been that. It might have, you know. Yeah.
I didn't anticipate what the lesson would be. I just assumed the idea was, okay, this is how he gets over his fear of killing an animal. But the lesson was even bigger than that. And it was that the fact that when he misses, he feels the guilt about missing, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to when he did it on purpose. So it was... It went in an area where I thought I knew what was going to happen, and yet it did, but in a way I didn't expect. And that's probably like the best way a scene or chapter can resolve, in my opinion. So, yeah, he progressed well, and like I said it before, but I feel like every chapter that you go deeper into this book, I'm learning more about him, and it feels like he is growing. So, yeah, just keep doing it.
Awesome. All right, I guess that's...
Yeah.
All I got, I you guys got to tear me a new one sometime.
Sorry. I got a quandary.
Write a bad thing. We'll do it.
Okay, I'll write some bad stuff. What's your
quandary? I'm starting a new story.
Again?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I do. And this one is called Mortimer Montclair Buys an Earth. And it's about a dude who buys an alternate Earth from the government.
Okay.
And then it's about him, but I also want it to be about a guy who's actually building the Earth, the structures on the Earth. So I had the idea of, like, in the future... The government, you know, controls all the alternates. They can get there. Someone can buy them. There's sides set aside for people and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would hire these companies that would go out, like send a person out with like a big kind of 3D modeling machine. And he would just go out and build whatever the owner wants. So like he would get daily design updates and everything. And I wanted to talk about that guy.
That's a really weird idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he'd be like on the Earth or on this new Earth, just like building a castle. And he'd be building something. And then like, he'd get an email and be like, nah, can we do it over here? And he's like, fuck, goddamn.
So it's just from the perspective of a contractor in the future.
Exactly. But like he's talking about the bureaucracy of like the new Earth mm-hmm. government and everything and how like most people can only afford to live on the moon and the Earth has become this crazy thing. And I don't know to go into that or just stick with the contractor.
I think that's a fun idea.
Yeah.
I think you should
write an outline and then you can make that decision.
I was about to say I would love to see an outline.
Maybe one day you'll ever
write an outline.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of outlines, I didn't bring my outline for the film I was going to make about that LARP story mm-hmm. Because if you read it wouldn't really make sense to anyone because you're not in my head, but my hope is that by the next time we sit down, I'll have a lot more to show you guys in terms of like hopefully a fairly detailed outline on how this story would fit into a feature-length film.
Now, also, it doesn't have to be complete either. Like, remember, I was turning in incomplete outlines.
True, true. So. But this one's so sparse, it, like, would be a waste of time. Like, you'd read it in, you know, 8 seconds, you know. But
I got 8 seconds, Doug. I got eight seconds.
Well, it would be a waste. It would just be like, all it is that, oh, I've started to flesh out the characters, and we got names for them, and it's shaping up. But I will say that I recently found out the original post that inspired this whole thing had a sequel story.
From the original.
There's another story, and I started to read that, and it's epic length. Like, the original story is about 35 pages. The sequel story is over 100 pages.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I haven't even finished reading it yet. I mean, the second story is not going to have anything to do with what I'm doing, but I was just curious because I was always wondered if there was more to the story, and apparently there was. But yeah, I've been working my way through that, trying to get my story straight and how it's going to be different from the original text and how it's going to make a better... how to make a movie about it better as a movie and not just, you know... Mm-hmm. reiterate what was already done. So
cool. I'm excited to see an outline.
Oh, there will be one. You've seen other ones I've seen before.
Cool. Like, yeah. We'll
certainly be
that'll
outline.
Be our first t-shirt.
Yeah. I'm excited to see an outline. Ooh, I'd like to see that outline.
I can't do an outline because I don't know what's going to happen next until I write it.
Well, that's what an outline is.
I sit down and I write what happens.
You write just the big points on the outline, and then you start being like, oh, wouldn't this be fun? Wouldn't this be fun? And then you do what I'm doing where I look at my outline and I start writing it, and I'm like, oh, but this can happen in this chapter, and then this, and then this, and then this.
That just sounds insane to me.
And then you go like, and then they kiss.
Yeah, and then they touch dicks.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to our fan submissions.
Yes.
All right, so which one do you want to do first? Let's do the sequel second.
Yes.
Okay. Our first submission is Goodbye, Be Safe, Farewell, Part 1 by Hans Menon. So we're going to have a lot of critiques and criticism for the both of you guys because this is not a continuing thing, but don't be discouraged.
Yeah.
We're all on the right track. We're all on the same team.
Yes.
So who wants to summarize what happens in this submission?
I'll do it.
Okay, Max, what happens?
All right, it's about a family who is driving somewhere, and they get to a government or military installation where they're asked for papers. You can tell the mother is kind of nervous. The father seems proud and sad. They get into this installation. For some reason, because the kids are twins, it seems important or odd to the government people. They get in, they're given drinks, they're watching other families be sad, and they're talking about the kids being frozen. Is there anything I left out?
I think that's the bulk of
it.
I think you got it. Yeah.
That's the bulk of the action that happens, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. All right, so let's talk about it. What do you guys think of Goodbye, Be Safe, Farewell?
I was, let's just say, I didn't know where we were going, so I was enjoying the ride of what was going on at first, and then... I was really intrigued when, like, there's people who are crying, you know, mothers and everything. I was like, what's going on? And when they get there, they say two, but there's three kids in the car. I'm like, are they trying to smuggle another kid onto, like, a spaceship or something? Yeah. And it kept me guessing most of the way.
I'm going to run through real quick some nuts and bolts criticism, not the story, just because it will be important to get your point across. It starts with a lot of run-on sentences, and those get better as it progresses. So that's, I mean, something you could break it up a little bit, make it more clear.
Yeah. Well, and also, don't be afraid of the occasional run-on sentence.
Mm-hmm. It felt like these were a bit more confusing.
Yeah,
that was the issue.
When you do them every now and again, like if you describe the city and a little bit of a run-on sentence because it's so vast, you can kind of display that. But yeah, there was a lot in the beginning.
Yeah, where it's about different things at the same time and it a little confusing. There's many times a very vague, passive voice. And normally I don't really care about passive voice because there's very good places to use it. Where if things are unsure or they are vague, like... If you're trying to soften the blow of something, it's okay to use passive voice. Like, he may have shot somebody. You know, it's okay to use passive voice in that. But when you're trying to just get the facts straight, it's...
And display to the reader where they are.
Yeah, you can't be so... You're not saying anything wrong, but it feels as though you're wishy-washy about the details. And you're not. You're giving the same information either way. General grammar needs to be tightened up a bit because I was confused in a couple parts because of the place a comma was... placed or not placed where it I wasn't sure what that phrase was modifying. Grammar would help. And then the last nuts and bolts critique I have is that it has the internet style of formatting where paragraphs are non-indented and they're double spaced.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Between them, that kind of works against you in this one. It really does break up the flow of the whole thing and really makes the last sentence of each paragraph more important than it should be.
Yeah. I would say another thing I noticed is the kids, you're juxtaposing the older kids versus the younger kid, who is just about his primal urges. He wants the apple juice. He's got to pee. And the other kids, there's an opportunity to make them
more distinct from
each other.
Yeah,
be like, well, even
one
more
of them
than
likes
him.
Coffee, I think, right?
Yeah,
that was the major distinction.
No, I did feel the same thing that the younger kid was very well separated from the older two.
But I mean, like, they in their own voice, you could be like, oh, you know, we're not him. We're doing this important thing. We are.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah. I have no idea what the importance of twins are.
Well, it might have to do with their age. Like, they fit in a certain age bracket.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. So, nuts and bolts criticism out of the way, whatever. All that can be fixed really easily. Not a big deal, not a detractor. As far as just actual use case, I think there's a few things. So the use of father and mother to describe the mother and father, it gives a false sense of a first-person narrative. So you as the narrator are calling them mother and father. I think it's coming from your perspective, and it's confusing. It kind of messes with the narrative. Also, in the paragraph about taking the picture – the first time, use the word film. It should be on film to take this photo instead of digital. And they're like, oh, but film it, as in take video.
And that
was pretty confusing. So that's, I mean, there's other ways to like separate that. And then in the last sentence of that same paragraph, you actually change to second person perspective when you're talking about, and you do this a couple times, not a big deal, but you say that you would want this to be this way if you were going through this, and that shifts the whole thing. So you can say that same thing without and make it about what the father would want.
I did like the symbolism of why he wanted it on film, like because him in the darkroom would keep kids. It didn't happen to
him. Yeah, that's
it's nice. It's a great point that I think if it wasn't shifting the perspective would have hit a lot harder.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a very good idea. What I would have liked is leading up to the thing, I think the kids should be in dialogue either with each other or with Lyndon about what they're about to do. They don't have to give anything away, but the total lack of foreshadowing, I feel like you're hiding the ball too much. Like, I don't really know what's coming, and not in a way that makes me feel anticipation. It's just kind of like, let's see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, I could have had more from the parents about why this is happening. Are they giving their kids? Are they being made to give their kids?
And it doesn't have to be anything that will give it away. Like, you could just be like, oh, well, you know, you're old enough now. Like, you hit this age. It's time that we go to this place. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm really excited. And then Lyndon could be asking questions like, what's it going to be like there? Well, we don't know.
Do I have to go when I get old enough? Is this a one-time thing? Any bit of information
that doesn't give away what you're setting up, just something that gives them foreshadowing, so the reader is asking themselves the same questions.
You should still see the outline of the thing you're approaching. You don't have to see the detail, but you should know you're getting to somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I think even just one or two lines that just they can be talking around the actual subject, but just leading to it, so that we know they're not walking into a disintegration chamber, so that they're not.
Because the kids seem to know where they're going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I, as a reader,
just
have
not
no
talking
idea
about it.
I was hoping, like, there was going to be a. Because it seemed like they were going towards, like, a spaceship or something. I was hoping there was going to be a twist where, like, they were being sacrificed to a god. Like,
that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, like, it was going to be, like, they're going to go see the god emperor. And...
But, like, all this science is leading to, like a black magic ritual. Like, no, the sun must rise next month. We have to.
But I think that's my complaint, is that I'm imagining all these scenarios. And if I have this expectation, I have so many ways to be disappointed.
Yeah.
When you get to what your premise is. But if you start with leading it up where this is they're going to go somewhere, actually, and they're going to do this, and other people have gone before, or if, just something like that, just some kind of hint, maybe one or two that you can kind of talk around it. It will stem that off a bit, and I'll be more invested in what this reveal is going
to
be.
And because I still don't really know what they're about to do, like, they're going to be frozen, but is it part of, like, a space mission, or are they being frozen and they're going to thaw them out in 100 years when the Earth is better? Because he calls the world a wasteland, and I'm like, okay, so...
Yeah, with lots of scars.
Kind of post-apocalyptic, okay, I get that. But yet they're driving in a car, they're wearing suits, and then they get there, and they're offered coffee, apple juice, and, like, any drinks that they could ever want, and they don't act like...
Death Row, yeah.
Well, but they don't act like it's a big deal. Like, if the kids show up, and they're like... Hey, would you like some apple juice? And it's like, oh, well, he's never tasted apple juice before. You'd be like, oh, okay, like this is like a big important place that has all these resources that they're not used to. Or even if they were not driving in a car, but instead they were like, if the car was like a really old clunker and most people were walking there, or if they were on a horse, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know where the story goes, so I don't know how bad things are on Earth that this seems necessary, because other than them driving through a desert, I don't know what's so bad. And,
just a few more hints.
Yeah, right? I get it. It's the first chapter. We're just dipping our toe into this world, so I'm not expecting to know everything. But even though the kids didn't have a reaction to it, they're just like, oh, this place looks really cool. And I'm like, I agree. It sounds like it looks really cool. But are they impressed because they've never seen anything like this before? Are they used to living in a mud hut? Or, you know, or have they seen big cities before? Like, I didn't get enough of anyone's perspective to know whose perspective I should be with, other than I'm assuming it's not the mother and father, because if it was their perspective, they'd have a name. But, you know, is this going to be a story about the twins that wake up 100 years from now on another planet, or is it going to be about the little brother that's left behind who barely has a memory of his older brother and sister?
And
like, I didn't know where I was.
Yeah, we should know that by the end of the first chapter.
Maybe.
Who we're following.
I mean, I'm a little more ambivalent about that kind of thing, but... I think we can all agree. You know how to tell a story.
Yeah.
We're into it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep working at it. Like, this is something we're intrigued. We do want to know what happens. None of our criticisms are even, you know, idea-wise. It's just kind of like execution on, you know, maybe making this work for you a little bit more.
If anything, I just want to get to it sooner. You know, like, I just want to know what the story is, because I am intrigued. I just need to get there.
Yeah. We reasonably know that there's what you can and can't accomplish in a first chapter.
So. Yeah.
All right, so our next submission is Chapter 1, our much-requested chapter by Jeffrey McSorley Jr. of Dawn of Magic.
I love that name.
His name?
His name. Like it.
All right,
It sounds like an actual author's name to me. We're like, the new best-selling novel by Jeffrey McSorley Jr.
So who wants to summarize?
All right, so make Doug do it.
Doug, you want to summarize?
I read it a week ago. I don't have the best memory.
Okay, I'll do it. The first chapter here is... a character named Marcellus wakes up, gets ready for school, almost misses the bus. Everybody at school hates Marcellus. He's been hearing a roaring sound in his ears, and he gets to class and his teacher hates him. And then the roaring continues, but now everybody can hear it. And then a portal in the wall opens made of flame, and it's a dragon, and he roasts his entire class, but Marcellus is safe. And then the dragon carries him out of the school.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean that's the action that happens, but there's a lot of internal, you know,
and it could be like how long has he been hearing this roaring? Because it says like his ritual is to go into the bathroom and like drown all that out.
Mm-hmm.
So like, has he been hearing this roaring for a very long time?
I've got a lot of criticisms, all constructive. I'm not going to dog you, but what do you guys think?
I found this really hard to read for one major reason, and that was the tense, the present tense. Made it just it put an extra, like, it felt like delayed almost, even though it was in the present tense. It felt my brain needed one more second to process everything and kind of figure out what was actually going on. Yeah.
The present tense didn't bother me so much, except for that a couple of times the tense changed in the same sentence. It says Marcellus shook his head and he goes to the sink.
Yeah.
That's confusing, and I have to reread it in a weird way, because now I'm trying to think. So anytime you use the past tense in this, it's because he's remembering something that happened before this moment. And when you shift like that, I'm thinking this isn't happening right now. It's something he remembered, but no, did it? Yes. So that, I mean, if you're gonna use present tense, I'm okay with it. But
you got to stick to it.
Yeah, keep it tense. Yeah. And as a teacher, just the problems of children is just like bleh to me. Like, it's just,
you have no sympathy.
Is he overreacting? Yeah, no sympathy at all. I'm like, oh, everyone hates me and everything, and then something crazy happened. So maybe he wasn't overreacting.
So what's interesting is that there are a few things in this that would be criticisms if it was a film, and I find it amusing because it's not a film. It's not a film, but if you turned in a script with some of these elements, people would be like, ugh. But not because there's anything wrong with him. They've just seen him a million times, like waking up to your alarm clock.
That was yeah. My first note. it's an alarm clock morning routine trope. Goes, yeah, brushes his teeth, goes to the sink, does all that stuff. But my problem was that, it may have just been the present tense is what was stopping the story from getting to me. But I had no idea what this main character looked like until, like, you know, several pages in. Like,
he knocked on the bus.
Yeah. There's so much detail about these minor things, like what his hand is doing, what his face is doing, what his mouth is doing. And I'm like, okay, but every human being has those things. You know, I can't picture who your character is.
Check your privilege, Doug.
But even his age, like, because it's like it says that he's aged 15 years old. Well, yeah. I've already got a picture in my head of like a grown man waking up, because I have no idea. I've never read the story before. I have no idea where it's going. It says he's wearing Batman pajamas, and I go, oh, he's not a grown man. He's a child wearing Batman pajamas. Then say that he's 15 years old. And I go, 15? It's a little old for Batman pajamas.
Yeah, why was his pee so dark? I was assuming someone waking up after a hangover.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's what I thought too at first. Yeah. But, you know, but then once we established, okay, like, he's, you know, he's moving to the house and he's, you know, oh, mom left the TV on again. I was just like, well, why does he say that out loud? You know, again, it's like, because it was in the present tense, I started to judge it as if this was a script. And not like a book, and that's why I had to be careful with what my notes really were, because I started to review it as if it was a screenplay.
Now, the other trope that gets seen in screenplays a lot is people going to the sink and washing their face when they hear something or see something. That's another one that's a little common. This isn't a screenplay, but I'll tell you before I get into kind of like the bigger criticisms, I want to say that like I enjoyed it the whole way through. I was intrigued. Like the reveal at the end of what was happening, I'm like, yes, like yeah. This is.
I definitely
things
did
are
not
moving
see that
and
coming.
Happening. Like, yeah, it was. That's. I think you got a great idea.
Great idea. The execution on the dragon was a little weird for me. He's like, "Yes, I am a dragon, and I'm here to save you." And it's like, is that what he would say?
Well, I mean, I think I don't have a problem with the dragon's dialogue. I want to get into the dialogue of the kids, and Marcellus himself, because
I hear all dragons as Sean Connery. And to me, that's not a Sean Connery thing that a dragon would say.
You haven't played enough Skyrim.
So the problem with the dialogue is that it's too specific and unprovoked for the teenagers. The quip about your dad dying in the sandbox is way too much of an adult thing to say.
Yeah.
And when he says, like, hallucinations are not a sign of sanity, like, is he repeating that? Because that's too performed. Like, nobody talks like that. Also, the racism against him isn't believable. And I don't mean that in the way that, like...
Racism itself isn't believable.
Right, or that somebody would get bullied as much as he does, but there's no context for it whatsoever other than his skin is black. And you do a good job by, like, showing why they won't forgive him for it, because he's not... I love the thing about him not selling weed being why he's not... You know, they'll pick on him because he's black. But... there's no underlying logic for the people who hate him, or like cultural touchstones that they're sticking to, because like that they hate black people. So it just seems very flat and superficial. But there's ways to fix that, because if he had done something wrong like years ago and everybody still blamed him for that, and that's why they're using his race, you know what I mean? Like it gives them the green light to be racist to him. Like, you know, if he hit somebody with a car, well, he's too young. But, you know, something like that, where he was involved in something that people feel like they're allowed to be racist to him, and that's what's brought up. I think it would feel a lot more like it came from somewhere.
Yeah.
Because as it is, I mean, they're just – it's – everything they're doing is illegal. You know, like nobody can it's – I just don't believe anybody would allow it to happen like that. Like somebody would stick up for him at some point.
Because it's not true
in real life.
Because too many negative things happen in a row, it almost becomes melodrama.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one awful, awful thing after another. And even this dragon coming to his rescue, although fantastic is pretty awful because it's like, I think, unless I'm interpreting it wrong, everybody died.
Yeah.
He's and even if you don't like those people, you're still a horrible human being. And you're like, oh, this is now an atrocity.
Yeah.
I just watched at least 20 people burned to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I thought that was a great reveal. I did not expect it. And it took things in a whole new direction and gave it a whole burst of energy that I was just like, okay, where are we going? Like in a good way.
And if you gave him something that he did wrong, it would make more sense why he doesn't really stick up for himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he might still feel guilty about that thing.
I've seen a lot of fire drills with that much human fat and everything that everyone else in that school is getting in.
Yeah.
That fire is spreading and no one's getting out.
But yeah, man, it's still good storytelling. Like, I mean, like the pace of what things happen and when and you do a good job of getting us in his head and what and how horrible his day to day life is. Mm-hmm. There's just a couple things like if you took away the alarm clock because it's done so much and just replaced it with a car horn beeps and he wakes up, he's like, oh my god, and then he looks down and it's like, oh, I'm waking up 15 minutes early, but he knows he can't get to bed. Like, that alone will break the trope and you have the same story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, you spent more time on the cereal than you did a lot of...
And the cereal was called Crunchy Semen, later. And I want to know if that was an intentional...
Yeah. I loved that. I loved that it was called Crunchy Semen. I did. I thought that was... I should have made a note of how much I thought that was funny.
I will say that although I was tripped up because of the present tense and because it started to read like a screenplay to me, but I got, and the reason why it, just because it was present tense didn't mean it felt like a screenplay. The reason why I keep saying it felt like a screenplay was one, present tense, but two, you keep describing these things that sound like shots, like a shot description in a film. Like, like I think I wrote down one of them was like a hands rummage through the silverware drawer. That to me is describing a close-up shot, like very specifically, like
disembodied hands, not his hand.
Yeah, yeah. But that suggests to me that as a writer, you know exactly the image that you were trying to portray, and you are getting very specific. So I feel that you're confident. I feel confident in saying that you know where you want the story to go and what images you want to portray. But I just think there's a better way to say it, and you don't need the present tense to make it feel intense or.
And I think if you switch to past tense, if you want to do present tense, don't let us stop you because there's plenty of good books written in present tense that are...
Yeah. You can make it work. Issue. It's just, it felt so specific is all.
I just feel like with past tense, you can get a lot more elastic with time.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like who this person is, you can go into their background, you can spend a lot more time with who they were before we met them.
Well, and then you can also make decisions about narrative voice and what position they're in. And Marcellus did this. This is why Marcellus did this. You could just have the narrator tell you why. You don't have to have a weird... You don't have to use some like... They usually say, show, don't tell, and he's doing a lot of great showing and not telling, but sometimes it's long.
Yeah, I don't really like the rule show, don't tell, unless... I think... I don't like the rule show, don't tell, because you need to be told a lot of stuff that is not happening. I think the rule should change to something like, make sure stuff happens.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's... Stuff should happen. I think the reader should be reading things that happen. You know, and if those things need context, tell them the context. But stuff needs to be happening. I think that's maybe a better rule. Because I read whole books where stuff didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like Catcher in the Rye. And like three things happened in that book and it sucks.
I hate it if
you guys love that book, but I fucking hate it.
I love it for its style, but no, there's no plot to that book.
And there's no...
Actually, you know,
no morality. It's just such a shitty thing to emulate.
There is morality, but it's like... the whole thing is it's almost self-parodying, and anyone who's read that book who really, really loves it doesn't understand how it's about the author feeling alienated, and they're like, well, I feel alienated too. He's like, if we all feel alienated...
Let's get Salinger in here.
It's a weird context when you all feel alienated, like when everyone says they feel alienated and they can attach to this book.
That's a uniting thing.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like,
you're not that
fucking weird, guys.
Kerouac's, like, on the road was like, he's like, this is a horror tale of shitty things that happened to me. And then people are like, oh, that's a lifestyle. And he's like, no, that was, I hated it. Why would I live like that?
I'm going to die drunk at 50.
He's like, why would anyone want, like, this is my terrible life. I wrote a warning tale.
Yeah, and there's people who look up to Holden Caulfield.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, oh, I just understand him so much. It's like, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, you're a terrible person.
He's a protagonist, but he's not, like, a role model. Mm-hmm.
boo, I have to go to a good school because my parents make me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna run away.
See, I've avoided the book for the same reasons that I've avoided all things Pokemon, because I feel like I'm too old at this point to get started.
You are too old for Catcher in the Rye. Yeah. I was too old when I read it. Maybe if I'd read it much younger, I would have had any love for it whatsoever. I just don't. I mean, I think it's well written. It's just, man, it is not my kind of book.
I was
at all.
Too young for Clockwork Orange when I read it for the first time.
So I'm sorry. I want to get back to. Yeah, I want to get back to.
We should cut that out.
So Jeffrey.
Thank you for sending.
Thanks to both our. So Hans and Jeffrey, you guys. It takes a lot of balls to submit things for Bald Critique.
Oh yeah,
you know?
And also Jeffrey, please. I want to know where this goes. Also, I want to know where the old lady fits in, because I miss her already.
But just so you know, this will be. So before we cut to the spoiler-laden discussion of Stranger Things, I just want to reiterate that this is going to be the season ender for Bad Storytellers, and I hope you guys enjoyed the first season. And as soon as we can, we'll be back with season two.
And for our two submitters, I liked it. I want to see more, but I'd like to see an outline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep. Damn it, Doug, you son of a bitch.
You took my line.
I was
wearing a t-shirt. Just, all right, it's good. I want to see an outline.
I liked it. I want to see an outline. All right, guys, thank you so much, and enjoy the discussion.
Thank you.
Bye.
So, what was your guys' favorite spoilerific stuff about Stranger Things?
It's just Dusty. 11 was super good. Her introduction is really good.
That little girl did so much acting with no dialogue.
Yeah.
She was really good.
And a kind of inconsistent character.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
can she speak or can't she?
Yeah, like the rules behind her are kind of wishy-washy, mm-hmm. but that's fine.
Sure.
And the actress does a lot with it and makes you care. Yeah, had that been another, had someone else portrayed 11, I'm not sure I would have cared as much.
There was one scene with her where I'm like, this is more Steven Spielberg than anything Steven Spielberg's ever done. And it was the scene where she walks into the supermarket to get Eggo waffles.
Oh, yeah.
and leaves. It was amazing. Like, like it's not as particularly powerful scene. It's just this, it's done so well that I'm like, I feel like I'm watching the best Spielberg kids movie.
And it's a display of like power and humor mm-hmm. at the same time.
Yeah, man.
I think the thing that surprised me and I was pleased with the most was that there was a grand unifying theory for why everything was happening. Like, you know, when the first episode happens, it's like, wait, so you got a monster, you've got psychics, you've got, what is this, time travel? Like there's so many things being thrown at you, and I'm like, how are they going to answer all of this shit?
And that the monster isn't from the Upside Down?
Yeah.
He's from something else, but made it to the Upside Down?
And the Upside Down might have been made by 11.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that part. What made you think that?
Like, it might be a shadow place that didn't exist before her. Like, they're fucking around with.
Oh,
shit.
I didn't think of that.
I got a whole rant on what I think was happening with the Upside Down and like why there's empty houses and yet there's
like
skeletons of people in there. You know, like
there were skeletons of people in the houses.
There was Barb's head.
Yeah, but she was in the Upside.
No, no. When they went into the gymnasium in the end, there was like skeletons of people and like bodies of other people.
Oh, was it because they were already dead in the real world?
No idea. I didn't recognize any of them.
Oh, no.
You're talking about the library, I think.
Oh, no, wait. Doug, I think you're talking about the thing that was like from Aliens where the people were tacked up to the walls and there's dead people. I think that's the lair of the monster. That's why.
Right.
He was pulling them.
Who were those people? How did they get there?
Well, they were the missing people.
Yeah, they said 10 people had gone missing in that time.
Yeah, so the monster had just been coming through and yanking people into the Upside Down.
But now, did the police say that, or was that just like the government stooge?
No, well, I think there's a government guy. Yeah.
The main government guy was like, 10 people are missing. We need to find the girl to solve this.
Right, and we don't know. Like they were probably covering up the whole time, and the sheriff was stuck on that. So,
yeah.
Well, that would explain that thing. But I guess that also answers the question of like when the Duffer Brothers are like, oh, are you going to make a sequel? They're like, well, yeah, it's a sequel, but they're hinting that it wouldn't necessarily involve the same characters. So I'm like, oh, if it's like,
I think they said it would.
That final episode.
Last one,
I don't care either way.
Yeah, I'll watch whatever they make next.
Just make a grungy 90s movie. Make a Reality Bites world.
I don't want to see that.
the only thing I didn't like was, like I said, Nancy was kind of a dum-dum. She kind of behaved in the stereotypical teenager lost in the woods kind of way. But, I mean, it was fine. It was executed well. I was just like, she was the most cliched out of everybody.
See, but the thing is, she was lost in the woods, and she's a young person who is dealing with a creature. Like,
And yeah, so instead she crawls into a hole, you know? Like, it didn't, like, I didn't understand what her motivation
was. The whole thing, the whole subplot of them wanting to kill the monster, those two, is the hardest pill to swallow, I think, whole thing. But I just, like, I have to accept this to keep moving forward, so.
I thought it was kind of like a zombie, like, these are the survivors, that these are the people that know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see someone else who knows what's happening, you're going to grip onto them.
Yeah. Oh, but, and speaking of which, okay, so the boyfriend gets reformed at the end.
Steve.
I love that. I thought that was great.
When it started, like when he's like, he's like, oh, I'll help you clean off this stuff. And like, shut up, dude. I'm like, no, man, I don't want to like this guy. Like, don't do this. Don't do it. And then
The Wire does that to me every season.
And but then they did it, and I was like, all right.
I was like, I'm glad that's how it ended up, because it would have just been too kitschy for her to end up with the damaged kid.
What was the brother's name? The older brother of the Will.
Was
the kid
it Jonathan?
I think it was Jonathan, yeah.
Yeah, he called her out, and she stopped, and she's like, yeah, that's me. He's like, you don't want to be your mother, but you really want to be your mother. And that's why she got together with the other guy, and she's like, yeah, I want to be my mom. I don't want to go. I don't want to leave this town.
But it was good.
Yeah, I love that.
I know. It's not something that's used against her. I'm like, oh man, I am glad she ended up with him, because he now deserves her.
Exactly. And the sheriff putting Eggos into the box is just like,
yeah,
thank you.
I was trying to explain that to my parents, and they're like, yeah. So he knows she's alive. I'm like, no. He saw that things that exist in our world can transfer through. So he's just hoping that she's getting the Eggos.
But don't even tell us. Like, that should be the end. There shouldn't be any more Stranger Things. It should end with that, where he's hoping.
So I don't know how I feel about that, but I do like that my favorite thing about this series, that I don't want to say it ends on a cliffhanger, because the main question is resolved.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where's Will? Is he going to make it out?
Yeah.
But they just leave, like, a little open-ended, be like, more stories could happen in this universe. Yeah, but the main problem's resolved.
The kid had eggs buried in him and planted in him.
Yeah. Well, there was a little thing, a little slug thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it ruined the ending for me, but I think that was the weakest part of the ending, because it felt so obligatory. Whereas, like, leaving the Eggos in the woods, I'm like, okay, that leads to more questions.
No, I kind of love the idea that he's now flipping in between our world.
No, that was fine. Like where he goes in the bathroom and the world kind of flickers. I was like, oh shit. Yeah. But isn't that the most 80s thing? And the slug pops out. I'm like, oh, come on.
Haven't gotten the slugs explained either. So they might be part of a different thing.
I assumed he got face raped because they pulled that long tube out of his mouth.
Yeah, but it might not be because of that monster. Because remember, Barb had the slugs crawling on her when she was dead. And is that the Demogorgon? Or is it something that lives in the Upside Down?
Or was it something weirder? Because he's also survived there for a long time, longer than anyone else did.
That's true.
And I heard an interview with the Duffer Brothers, and they said, like, that's what they want people to think, is that nobody's ever spent that much time there. That's why the world is kind of flickering for him.
And, like, that's the thing they used to do with movies, but, like, yeah, we killed the monster, and then everyone turns it back, and, like, something skitters out, and they're like, but what if?
What they used to do is a lot more cheesy. It's like, the monster's dead, but is it? Like,
that's the thing. That's what I liked. I saw that and I was like, thank you.
I get that, but I think the thing that I didn't buy was that Will, who'd survived this crazy ordeal, seen the shit that he's seen, coughs up a slug, and just goes and has a dinner like it's nothing. Like, I just didn't buy that he, of all people, wouldn't be like, Mom, can I talk to you? You know,
like, who says
he's like, I think he just wants it to be over.
Like, who says he's Will, though?
That's okay. Ooh, but no, for real, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
He was in the Upside Down and changelings.
I think it's also interesting just that the way the thing is set up. I don't mind if Eleven comes back for another season.
No, I don't.
Like, or they find some crazy way to bring her back. Again, they set up such a fun 80s movie universe that if they do it,
it doesn't violate any of its own rules.
Yeah, in a fun way. I'm going to be on board.
Oh, what about like a Jumanji movie?
Can we also just talk about the cop has the best moments?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we all know the exact moment when the cop went from stupid to awesome is in the bar where he's interviewing that guy.
Just cigarette out, hard cut, beating the ever-loving shit out of a motherfucker. I was like, fuck yes.
I was like, he really gives a shit about this.
He crossed that was the moment where he's like, oh, I'm investigating this, I'm doing whatever, to, okay, all in. Going all in. Let's see how this plays out.
I loved it. Now, there's other stuff that's hard pills to swallow, like when they catch him and then he wakes up in his own apartment. It's like, why is he alive?
Why is he alive, but they shot Burger Guy, who didn't know anything, in the back of the head?
Right. I feel like a sheriff disappearing causes them more headache than
Also, especially on the, what was the case he was working on? You know, like, he was last talking about going up to the, you know, to the lab.
Yeah,
we should go talk to the lab.
Can we talk about Burger Guy for a sec?
Yeah,
when Burger Guy first showed up at the beginning of in the first episode, I think that might be what won me over for the whole series. Because you got this character who appears in every way a stereotype, and then the moment the narrative shifts a little bit, you're like, "Oh, this is somebody really cares about people."
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he's a genuinely good
human. Boy, what are you stealing my food? And then he's just like,
"Yeah,
oh shit,
yeah, yeah. Like, you okay, kid?" Like, you know. And then from then on, it's like, "Okay, here's some ice cream." Like,
another moment I really loved was when, like, the MK Ultra, when they caught the sheriff down there, and they're like, "Well, hey, since you're down here," like they just used whatever they had. They had complete control of, like, every situation, mm-hmm. because they were the CIA, and they're like,
are they though? Okay, so here's the thing.
No,
are they a government organization, or are they a private company who pretends to be the government when it suits them?
Wasn't it MK Ultra was what they're talking about?
That's what the researcher did before. So I got the feeling that this power company is a private company that's doing illegal shit.
So like a military contractor?
Yeah, but not actually affiliated with the government.
Yeah, like they're hoping to have a breakthrough, and then
which would sort of make sense because they were strong army, but not strong army enough.
Yeah, like they didn't have.
Well,
they didn't bring in
11 to spy on the Russians.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah,
like they knew who to look for. You know,
fake soldiers. Well, even then was just projects, right?
And I love that premise that she winds up in this blank room. And she can hear them speaking, and then there's something else in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great.
That doesn't even notice her, and she's like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
so
is
spooky.
The
nope.
That is science. Like, we open a door and we're like, "Hey, what's in here?" And it's like, "Well, there's a lot of things in here.
two of them are monsters."
Yeah.
Two of them are monsters.
Yeah, I thought that was rad. But
spoiler alert, the monster's us.
No, it wasn't. Well, one of the monsters was us.
Yeah. One of the white-haired guy was straight up a monster.
Yeah.
He was a very, very
but
gross
then there was,
person.
There was a very literal monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And poor Barb.
Poor Barb.
Yeah.
Poor Barb.
Winona Ryder starts out as a terrible cliche that I didn't like very much, but as soon as she's introduced to Eleven, I was like, oh, this is nice. I like this.
Yeah.
Just keep this up a little bit more. It's going to be over soon. You're not going to be able to keep it up anymore.
That's some of the most intense acting I've seen her do.
Yeah.
She did a good job. Okay, so I think that's got to
handle
it.
Yeah, we got
it.
Yeah,
I don't think we're going to say anything else about this that nobody else has said. It's so much fun. It was just so much fun. I don't have... I think that's my overhyping it is when I recommend it to people. I'm like, it's just so much fun. Just go have fun.
Fuck yeah, Netflix.
The last thing I wanted to say about Winona Ryder, though, is that I've seen the cliche of, oh, this person sounds crazy, and they know they sound crazy, but you, the audience, know they're telling the truth. I've never felt as bad for them as I did for Winona Ryder in this, where it's just like, I know she's not crazy. It's like in every other horror movie or sci-fi thing, like, you've seen this, but for whatever reason, I just bought it, like... And I felt so bad for her more than anyone else. Maybe because she thought her kid was dead. Like,
well, especially with the cliche of the bad, the deadbeat dad. Very cartoonishly bad guy deadbeat dad, but perfect for this show.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's so perfect.
And when she found that, like, flyer from the lawyer, and she's just like,
"Get the fuck out!"
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. And the line
would have been more cliche is if he was eaten by the monster.
Yeah. Well, I love that. The line where I was like, oh, man, you're really tugging at like these heartstrings here is when Jonathan goes and visits him and gives him a flyer of him. He goes, here, so you can remember what he looks like.
Yeah,
I was like, Jesus.
Boom.
Yeah, it's good. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Bad Storytellers, now presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream us from Google Play. I've been your host, Josh LaForge, and I'd like to thank my writing group again, Doug Banks, Liam Malone, and Max Wessel. Now remember, as listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow to find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Bad Storytellers on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.